Broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web, you're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program is for general information and entertainment purposes only. CHSR HealthyLife.net does not recommend, endorse, or object to the views, products, or topics expressed or discussed by show hosts or their guests. We suggest you always consult with your own personal, medical, financial, or legal advisor.
Welcome to Centerpoint. I am your host, Dr. Ron Anbar. In this show, we will discuss ways that we can journey to our own centers. This can help us access our inner resources to improve our physical abilities and health, our mental strength, our emotional well-being, and our spirituality. And today I'm honored to introduce our special guest, Dr. Elvira Lang Anderson. Welcome, Elvira.
Oh, thank you so much for having me on your show. I mean, I've been following your work, and I think it is so exciting that the world is now becoming much more open to hypnotic methods in helping with even everyday life occurrences.
Agreed completely. In fact, I want to talk to you a lot about that, because sometimes you run into walls, and you've actually breached some walls, so I'm very curious in picking your brain and learning about it. Let me tell the audience a little bit about you. So Dr. Elvira Lang Anderson is an award-winning interventional radiologist known for researching the effectiveness and cost savings of rapid hypnotic techniques in medicine and dentistry. She crystallized these techniques and compounded comfort talk. This is in the large-scale clinical trials with now over 135,000 patients. She has demonstrated that comfort talk skills, including guidance and self-hypnotic relaxation, reduced pain, anxiety, drug use, and reduced complications of the operating table, and improving patient satisfaction ability to complete MRI examinations. And her recent interests examine patient-provider interactions and their impact on the operational efficiency of healthcare systems. She's also developed the Comfort Talk Pro app, which is available for free in the app and Google stores, and you can download it and use some of the scripts and hypnotic suggestions that have been used in hospitals to help yourself. And she's received multiple awards and has been featured extensively in the press and on television. Again, I'm so honored to speak with you, Elvira.
Oh, thank you. I'm delighted.
So I'm wondering, how did you go from interventional radiology to hypnotic techniques and comfort talk?
Well, it's a very logic step, because interventional radiology is basically surgery without a knife, you know, like angioplasties or removing gallstones or kidney stones, where you work on an awake patient, you know, using ultrasound or x-rays. But, you know, the patients do have their fears. You give potentially painful stimuli. And so you are the operator, and these patients look at you with their big fearful eyes, yeah? And there's a transference of emotions that we're researching now a lot these days. And so one day I saw a very scared young Vietnam veteran. And those days, this is nearly 30 years ago, I didn't know about PTSD. But what I've learned is, if patients get into a hospital setting and they put in a situation where they're perhaps you take their clothes away, they need to get in a gown, yeah, they can't move because you do a procedure on them, and whatever you do may affect their livelihood, you can see what enormous psychological stressors are there. And so as the people around in the team, one has to deal with that. And that's when I got the first time into seeing how a quick imagery process could work. But as a clinician and researcher, I wanted to know, is that also going to work for other patients? and what are the ingredients that can make such an approach safe and applicable in the modern medical system.
So were you interested in psychology before you came up with this idea? I'm curious how people evolve from traditional medicine to being more open to using the mind and imagery. How did you get involved in this?
We're very pragmatic. I mean, I saw this one case and I thought, well, you know, this is a quick case of hypnosis, worked really well for this person. You know, can we reproduce that? And actually, at the time, I was at Stanford in the VA in Palo Alto, and the VA actually funded our first clinical trial of educating frontline medical staff in hypnotic techniques. So those days, we didn't call it yet immediately hypnosis. We called it anodyne imagery and then self-hypnotic relaxation. And the more and more we worked, is we found out it takes not that much work, even though what we now call comfort talk, you end up talking less because you right away get to the point. So it was just very pragmatic, like, what works?
Had you been exposed to hypnosis beforehand somehow? You knew about it. How did you know?
No.
How did you learn that?
Oh, no. That patient, that was my first, whoa, this is amazing. It worked with this person. Well, let's see if it works with other people, too.
So you innately knew what to do with this patient, is what you're saying.
No, I didn't. I mean, you know, this patient and I tell you our criteria of success is, can I get a patient on the table or, you know, dental chair, wherever, keep them there, and do what I need to do with dignity. And this patient was very difficult to get on the table. He needed lots of drugs, yeah? And he had a repeat procedure every, you know, few months for a tube change, which, you know, isn't more invasive than changing earrings, yeah? But he was so scared. He needed all these drugs, yeah? And so, you know, he's a vet. He had one of his buddies, you know, vets do help each other, had to take off a whole day of work to drive him there because after you get these drugs for procedures, you can't go home. So it was that. And, you know, working on someone who's so scared, you know, is not very uplifting either for the operator. And that's where I saw the first time how some quick imagery hypnosis made all the difference. And I thought, very interesting. So I was fortunate at Stanford, visited David Spiegel, say, you know what, this is really interesting, tell me more about it, yeah? And so then, you know, I joined Society of Clinical and Experimental Hypnosis, you know, did some more, and then we worked with methodologies, with scripts for the patients, and then fortunately NIH at our first bigger trial told us, well, how do you control for the empathy of the provider? Couldn't it be that nicer staff gets more cooperation from patients? Yeah. Now, well, you work in the medical field, or any one of us who has a team, for you to go and rate which of your staff is more empathic or not, yeah, that's semi-suicidal. You would never do that, yeah. So we had to define empathy as empathic behavior, and for that went back to Milton Erickson. You know, Milton Erickson, very talented individual in hypnosis with great charisma. And, you know, Bandler and Grinder took apart observing him, like, what did he do? Yeah. And so there were certain behaviors he displayed with his patients that we then integrated in our teaching, so that we came up with a package of 8 behaviors that would define either empathic behavior and added to that a hypnotic script. And this is what we then tested, and ultimately called Comfort Talk. Now I'm very glad we were forced to do that initially, because it really made the science much cleaner. Because now if we train a team, we can take a video of team interactions before and after training and have a checklist, well, has their behavior changed? And the other good news is that once we see these behaviors change, it actually sticks. These behaviors stay around. We did, you know, when we train teams, we do see a continued sustenance of these behavioral skills that then become institutional culture.
That's fascinating. The reason I was trying to understand how you got started is because this transition that happened to me as well and some other physicians is key. If we can figure out, you're talking about how we could do this teams, but I'm always curious about what clicks to get it started, because, you know, we both believe that if the whole country or the whole world worked in this way, a lot of suffering would be alleviated. And yet there's much work to be done in that field. But you're doing amazing, 135,000 patients. So
right.
Walk us through Comfort Talk. If I was, what could explain how that works?
Well, again, I mean, we work mainly in the medical dental domain, yeah? And if you consider, this is a very unequal power relationship between patient and provider. And in addition, when someone comes for medical intervention, even if it's just diagnosis, one tends to be highly suggestible, and everything that can be misunderstood will be misunderstood. The difficulty in this setting is that very commonly medical staff will say things in the strong belief that it helps the patient, but having negative effects, such as, oh, it will not hurt that much, or how bad is your pain? And we had to do clinical trials to show that if you use such sentences, patients actually have more pain and more anxiety. But you can see how difficult it is to change a culture where people believe this helps, because if you say, oh, it's going to hurt, and yeah, it will hurt more, which validates the assessment of the person who made the statement in the first place, yeah? And then with the expectation, pain gets worse with the time. So you do need in your training to consider that you are dealing with belief systems of individuals who really want the very, very best for their patients. But they just may say things that produce the opposite. And so we work a lot on sometimes just slight changes in language, but in a way that helps the individuals who work in that setting to develop a language style that works for them and for their patients. Yeah? Let me give you an example. So I observed this one case. A woman comes for an MRI scan. She had a breast cancer, had some treatment. There is some concern there may be a recurrence, so she gets the MRI scan. She's nearly, all the sequences are nearly done. The technologist wants to say something nice, telling the patient's only going to take, you know, a few more minutes. And then she says, okay, you are finished now. Soon it's all over and I'll take you out. So for a patient to hear she's finished and it's soon all over means something very different. You know, the patient breaking out in tears. So again, a lot that is meant very helpful may not be perceived as such. Or, you know, for example, we trained a team at Tufts in Boston. Well, you've been in Boston, which is close to Chinatown. Okay, well, if people go out, you know, on the weekend, on Friday, have some nice drinks and fall on the pavement on their head, what's going to happen? They end up semi-drunk in the emergency room, And then at midnight, a poor technologist is there all alone with the same mid-rung person who doesn't want to get on the MRI scanner. Yeah? That takes a very different language type of encouragement than in another place in a suburb of Columbus, Ohio, where you would not believe how much old money is there, yeah? How many extremely wealthy people have their headquarters there, where if the woman doesn't want to take the bra off for the MRI because there's some metal on it, you know, that could burn if you, the skin if you don't take it off, but she doesn't want to take it off because that bra was just flown in from Paris on her private jet, yeah, very different language style. So you do need to work with the staff that works in a specific setting to find a language that works for that patient while still keeping in mind, inherently, patients are highly suggestible in that setting and also somewhat afraid of the outcome.
So when you're training staff to do this, do you train them locally based on the kind of patients they work with, or do you train them to look at how the patient reacts and adjust accordingly? How do you teach that?
So ideally, we teach on site. So we do have an online course, Comfort Talk Level 1. I mean, you can look at it on our website under Comfort Talk. So it's basically 20 segments. You know, they get continued education credits. And then for that, we train a relatively large group because it's online. A lot of people can do it. And then we train, let's see, a core group where we do a very intensive 8-hour session where we refine the techniques for difficult cases. And about half the time, we work on resistance. Resistance either in wanting to do it, resistance in the patient, resistance perceived in the environment, and even we all have this experience. Sometimes one really, really wants to do something, but then one finds a whole lot of excuses for not doing it, some what we call competing commitments. And so we work a lot to give the staff the security to do that. What we also do is we have one exercise where we work with them on specific challenging situations and what can they say in these settings, using some of the principles of hypnotic hypnoidal word choice, avoidance of negative suggestions, when to use direct suggestions or indirect suggestions, how to bring upon a sense of control, things like that.
So sometimes you have some staff resistance. Do you get resistance from hospital administrators, or do they get more buy-in because they didn't have to do it? What have you found?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, you've worked and you wrote about leadership, yeah? How behavior of leadership or poor communication at the leadership level can discourage people who work at a place. And I can tell you right now, after COVID, where lots of people left the healthcare profession, that is even more critical. And a lot of training starts at the leadership level with the hope it drips down, but it never does in our experience. So what we found, though, is if you train the frontline staff in these new communication skills, they suddenly get very good at managing uphill. So a lot of the conflict isn't seen as much anymore. And let's say if you have a department manager, let's say a chief nurse or somebody who works there, they're going to like it a lot because their frontline staff now can much easier deal with upset patients. And keep in mind, we do have a very, well, there's a reason in front of hospitals you see big signs, aggressive behavior will not tolerate it, yeah? I mean, you've seen it. Civility is less than it used to be. So if their frontline staff suddenly can handle all this much better, the supervisors do have less work with it. The hospital's administrations like it because we did all the research that shows they save money, they get better throughput, and they get higher patient satisfaction ratings which translates nowadays directly into revenue. Yeah. So that's how we approach this.
So you have a wonderful program, the Comfort Talk, that's helped many patients and many institutions. I'm wondering how you spread the word, like into new institutions. And I'm asking this question because in the world of hypnosis and the world of therapies in general, a new therapy may arise, but it takes a long time to get the word out. So how do you spread the news to new areas? How does that work?
Well, it takes a long time. You know, we did start this 30 years ago at Stanford, and last year we were finally invited by the oncology department to do a training at Comfort Talk. Takes a while. But basically now we do requests for training. We don't really market much, if any at all.
Sort of like the people come to you train. Like I do in my clinical practice, I treat the people come to see me, but I don't go out and try to recruit more patients because I have plenty to do. Well, I am fascinated by how well Comfort Talk has helped people. And when we come back, I want to ask you about potentially expanding this kind of therapy or this kind of approach to other arenas in life. This is Centerpoint with Dr. Ron Anbar.
Coming attraction, Life Guide for Teens, Harnessing Your Inner Power to Be Healthy, Happy, and Confident. A new book by Dr. Ron Anbar to be published early 2025. Dr. Anbar's renowned counseling practice, Centerpoint Medicine, doesn't fix teens who are struggling. They give them the tools to heal themselves and support them while that healing happens. Life Guide for Teens will share Dr. Anbar's tools for self-empowerment and give teens hundreds of tips to choose from to help themselves heal. The book will be available from Amazon and wherever fine books are sold.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Healing and changing children's lives with hypnosis is very real and very possible. Dr. Ron Anbar's new book, Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis, provides you meaningful stories and expert explanations to show you not only the process of hypnosis, but its many benefits for overall wellness. Whether a parent, practitioner, or medical doctor, this book opens the way to complete connection, so necessary for healing. Get your copy of Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis at Amazon.com or visit DrAnbar.com.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Dr. Ron Anbar and his dedicated team of healthcare providers offer unique health services to help patients overcome psychological roadblocks or use the power of their minds to improve their overall health and well-being. At Centerpoint Medicine, with services in La Jolla, California and Syracuse, New York, this caring staff are waiting just to help you. Find out more at CenterpointMedicine.com. Can't wait? Make your appointment now. Call 858-201-4001. That's 858-201-4001.
Audiobooks gives you instant access to over 50,000 of the bestsellers and hottest book titles in romance, mystery, fiction, and many other genres. Just visit HealthyLife.net's advertiser page and click on Audiobooks to get started.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
If you are a medical or licensed healthcare professional or just anyone looking for a qualified hypnosis practitioner, then go on over to ASCH.net. That's the American Society of Clinical Hypnosis. At ASCH.net, you can get certified, attend workshops, and even find a hypnosis practitioner or consultant. ASCH provides an opportunity to learn and interact with colleagues. So whether you're a professional wanting to learn hypnosis or a patient wanting help with a problem, visit ASCH.net now.
More exhilarating talk. HealthyLife.net.
Welcome back to Centerpoint. I'm your host, Dr. Ron Anbar. Our special guest, Dr. Elvira Lang Anderson, who's shared with us her amazing and wonderful work with Comfort Talk. I want to again mention that the Comfort Talk Pro app is available for free in the app and Google stores. You can download it today and start seeing some of this magic. So one of Dr. Lang Anderson was the president or the past president of Society of Clinical and Experimental Hypnosis, and one of the ethics of hypnosis societies is that we should receive training in hypnosis and apply our hypnotic work as licensed healthcare providers and within the scope of our practice. So I'm going to ask you a couple of questions outside of the scope of your practice and see how you handle it. So I'm listening, you know, we're great believers in that, in the impact of talk and imagination. And as we're talking, I'm thinking, gosh, first of all, could a comfort talk approach help patients with psychological issues, not medical issues? So that's one question. And then the next question I'm going to ask is, what about in other arenas in life, such as in education or in training athletes? Because I know that the same principles that you use in comfort talk apply to other groups of people. So what have you thought about expanding the program? Or?
Well, I think one should really stick to what one knows well about. And for many years, and also American Society of Clinical Hypnosis, I couldn't join for many years because training regular nurses and technologists was considered unethical, yeah? So they would have thrown me out, even if I would have joined. I mean, now the spectrum has changed in realizing there are people who have to deal with stress of others, in that case, or perhaps even themselves, anyhow, in everyday life. And if it is something where they are working at, you can add these technologies of specific, whatever, behavior verbally and non-verbally, like we use in comfort talk. It is kind of an adjunct to what you do anyhow. So we also always say, for sedation, you know, comfort talk shouldn't be your only piece of repertoire, or for resuscitation, yeah? You have to know how to do the other things in your profession. So also, if let's say you're a psychologist or you do cognitive behavioral therapy, yes, you can integrate some hypnotic elements. Where can you, as the regular public, use these techniques? Again, it's a lot of it talking techniques. And wherever an application is particularly helpful is when you deal with an unequal power relationship and in a setting where you are much more suggestible for both sides. I mean, you can, if you use it, abuse it, yeah, which, let's say, cults do. They abuse that methodology. On the other hand, even if you're a patient, you also can hypnotize your provider a little bit so that they are calmer doing a case on you. And, I mean, I do that too, yeah? I mean, not necessarily saying I do hypnosis for you, but I can guide how the verbiage goes. Oh, you know, in our app we have one piece that's called confidence. How can you get yourself quickly up in a state of confidence? Yeah, let's say you do a job interview. Yeah, how are you going to get yourself into that state? So, or, you know, we have two books out of one, like Patient Sedation Without Medication. You know, it could apply. There is a lot of elder care now happening, yeah, a lot of hospice care, these settings, palliative care. How do you handle sick relatives and yourself in that setting? Keep in mind that the whole comfort talk principle affects both parts, yeah? If you make the other person feel better, you feel better too, yeah? So, you know, we train receptionists, yeah, which is forbidden according to AF, yeah? But, you know, these are the people who see the first person they arrive at. Again, so there is obviously a potential of abuse that you can use whatever persuasive methods to get a vulnerable individual possibly to do things that otherwise they might not. And other people have done research about that. But, you know, if you want to look more, we got a book for providers, Patient Sedation Without Medication, and for patients, Managing Your Medical Experience.
Yeah, I think I'm thinking is, like, I counsel children. I do counseling with children, and I see the product of the educational system. And you can have a teacher who says, uses a particular language, like, you'll never amount to anything in math. And that's pretty direct. but that kids absorb that, and that becomes their reality. And it seems to me that in that kind of setting, you'd want educators to follow the same principles that Comfort Talk provides, make them sensitized to the language that they use, like learning tutors and counselors in school levels. As an advocate for children, I think about this a lot, should understand these principles and apply them in interacting with their, again, the children are vulnerable, the school officials are positions of authority, have the same kind of dynamics that take place. And I'm wondering, I guess we'd have to find a partner in education to say, hey, we should apply this, we should give the training to our teachers and our staff, likewise.
Education or just parents, you know, it is a common issue. Well, interestingly enough, when, you know, we got into this whole thing, we had to get also into how do we validate the training, let's say, of the research assistants and then of the staff. And fortunately, we got NIH support through their Small Business Innovation and Research Program where we could look at that. But a lot of it was influenced in having to assess how effective is teaching. And so I had worked with Harvard Medical International, with Liz Armstrong, who at the time had directed the curriculum reform, and she had come from the whole teacher experience, finding out that many teachers are not really trained of how to teach in an effective way, because just like in the teachings at the end you give, people have different ways of perceiving the world with their senses, but also very different ways of learning. Yeah, some learn more experientially, some by, you know, practical application, going through a so-called cold learning cycle. And we have been very heavily influenced by that model of education by integrating it in our staff training. That's why we can get it done, like online with 20 sessions and to then finally stick. And so, yes, it would be great to bring it back into the educational system in supporting what they are doing.
Yeah, that would be a nice evolution of this. Again, it's so important. It's part of human interactions. We're talking about how to improve communication and help it, and give suggestions that are helpful, as opposed to ones that set people back. Fascinating stuff. We'll be right back after these messages. This is Centerpoint with Dr. Ron Unbar.
Make-A-Wish has been granting life-changing wishes for children and families for over 40 years. A wish is something that gives children the opportunity to look outside their illness and restore a sense of childhood back to the child. With the help of donors and more than 43,000 worldwide volunteers, Make-A-Wish has collectively granted more than 520,000 wishes worldwide. Dr. Anbar has referred many patients to Make-A-Wish. To make a donation, go to worldwish.org. That's worldwish.org.
HealthyLife.net, the positive radio network.
Healing and changing children's lives with hypnosis is very real and very possible. Dr. Ron Ambar's new book, Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis, provides you meaningful stories and expert explanations to show you not only the process of hypnosis, but its many benefits for overall wellness. Whether a parent, practitioner, or medical doctor, this book opens the way to complete connection, so necessary for healing. Get your copy of Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis at Amazon.com or visit dranbar.com.
Reach your health and fitness goals. Whether you want to lose weight, learn to dance, build muscle, or just live healthy, Beachbody gives you unlimited access to the nation's most popular fitness and weight loss solutions. Visit our advertiser page and click on Beachbody now.
Dr. Ron Ambar and his dedicated team of healthcare providers offer unique health services to help patients overcome psychological roadblocks or use the power of their minds to improve their overall health and well-being. At Centerpoint Medicine with services in La Jolla, California and Syracuse, New York, this caring staff are waiting just to help you. Find out more at centerpointmedicine.com. Can't wait? Make your appointment now. Call 858-201-4001. That's 858-201-4001.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Coming attraction, life guide for teens harnessing your inner power to be healthy, happy, and confident. A new book by Dr. Ron Ambar to be published early 2025. Dr. Ambar's renowned counseling practice, Centerpoint Medicine, doesn't fix teens who are struggling. They give them the tools to heal themselves and support them while that healing happens. Life Guide for Teens will share Dr. Ambar's tools for self-empowerment and give teens hundreds of tips to choose from to help themselves heal. The book will be available from Amazon and wherever fine books are sold.
All positive talk with a mature edge. HealthyLife.net.
Welcome back to Centerpoint. I'm your host, Dr. Ron Ambar, a special guest, Dr. Elvira Lang Anderson, founder of Comfort Talk, and other things. So I know your recent interest includes patient-provider interactions, and I want to pick your brain on that if I might. I focus a lot of that in therapy, clinical therapy. Developing a rapport, a relationship is key, and developing it rapidly can be helpful, although not essential. And I'm wondering, in interventional radiology, for example, when you develop rapport with a client, what are the elements? How do you do that besides talk? What nonverbal things do you do, for example?
Well, what we do at the beginning, we do match the patient's behavior, loudness of voice, just for a few moments. There is all this work about mirror neurons of how, you know, you do establish rapport. And so by matching that for a short moment and getting sync, which then allows you to lead into a more resourceful state, is a very powerful technique. Let's say if you have, for example, somebody who's breathing very, very fast, yeah, you know, in the ER, you even don't know kind of what to do, and they're breathing very fast, then if you, let's say, breathe with them fast, just for a few breaths, and then you can lead them through a very simple intervention like that to a more relaxed state. Or also, you know, some people need a lot of space between them and another person. Others need a lot of closeness. And our mantra is that the patient drives the communication mode. If somebody needs space and they're sitting in a chair in the waiting room, and you want to be extra nice and get really close to them and look them in the eye and have your open body position, they can't go anywhere. They're already at the wall, yeah? So we get people into tune. Well, what does the patient need? And then you have a bit more space. Or some people need to be right in your face. And if you're a person who needs a lot of space and then you jump back, that relationship's over before it even starts. So we go a lot into that first seconds of the encounter, because when you're in rapport, when things are easy, they're easy. Then automatically the right words are following and people know what to say. It's when you see that patient and they haven't done anything, said anything, you don't know why, and you just think, oh, yeah, you gotta get over that, like in a few seconds. And the very best way is to first match their demeanor, where they're coming from, which is your willingness to walk in their shoes. How do they feel in that setup? And then lead to something more helpful.
How do you teach healthcare providers to maybe counter the reflex might be to jump back? How do they overcome that? What tools do you teach the, them to use.
Well, we practice it, yeah. I mean, they from the 8 hours live are pretty intensive training. And a lot of people are not aware of that. Yeah. Of how their body behavior affects other people. And usually most individuals are very adaptable when they're not stressed out. But when you're a patient stressed out, they're completely focused on their mode of perceiving the world, yeah? Often in either auditory or visual or kinesthetic elements. And then if you live in a different perceptual category and there is stress, it is going to be much harder to establish that rapport. Once you have the rapport, typically both parties adjust and then communication becomes easy.
And if you're a healthcare provider who has trouble looking people in the eye, what do you tell them?
Well, there is a lot of misconceptions with the looking in the eye thing, because everybody assumes that the patient wants you to stare into their eyes, yeah? Which is not the case. It's not appropriate for all cultures. Also, what happens if, let's say, somebody is more auditorily inclined, these people tend to look more to the side when they really focus on what you say. If they're very kinesthetically anchored, they look down, yeah, because that's how they take in best what you say. The key thing for the healthcare professional is not to mistake that they're not interested in what you're saying. If, on the other hand, you have a patient who really wants to look into your eyes and does that, all you need to do is just keep it for a few seconds. It's okay. And then keep going whatever else you were doing. That typically works pretty well, because by that point you are in sync, and then you're going to be feeding off of each other's, you know, behavior. And again, where we deal with these transferences are very, very quickly, even if they somewhat subconscious.
Do you find when you're teaching this to healthcare providers, they ask a lot of questions? Are they engaged? Or I guess it probably varies. How does the educational process go?
Well, I mean, we go through the whole cult learning cycle and realizing everybody jumps in into that cycle from a different area. So we make sure that we, at some point for each topic, yeah, for example, there is an element where they can, you know, reminisce about an experience that may relate to that. It also has an element where, let's say, they get the scientific knowledge behind it. Then, you know, what does it take to actually do to practice it? And then they actually do it. And after then they do it, that then creates, again, the concrete experience. And so you go around the cycle. So now, in order to keep the attention of all the people involved for 8 hours, our rule is that human attention span nowadays is maximally 10 minutes. So either every 10 minutes we use a different modality of presentation, which may be slides or video or something experiential or a group exercise, yeah, or change the person who's presenting. So it's extremely dynamic, yeah. But again, it's what you mentioned earlier. You have to include the educational elements, the didactic elements, plus the content elements.
So we can shift gears a moment. One of the things that I was the concept of detached concern. So you should be concerned for the patient, but remain detached. You personally are unaffected. Do you address that kind of interaction? I actually didn't buy it as a medical student, but do you address that kind of thing with the trainees?
Well, it comes out in resistance, which is, well, if I'm going to do this well, am I then going to get all the crackpots in the community who want to be treated by me? And what, am I then going to go home and bring all the patients' worries home? That is one of the resistance pieces that we commonly hear. And we have a very specific exercise for that, which is the big assumption exercise, where you can find out quickly, well, in 20 minutes, what the underlying competing commitments are.
Fascinating. We'll be right back after these messages. This is Centerpoint with Dr. Ron Anbar.
More than 30,000 children and adults of every race and ethnic group in the U.S. have cystic fibrosis. Cystic fibrosis is a disease causing long-lasting lung infections, limiting the ability to breathe over time. Dr. Anbar participated in research that helped advance survival of cystic fibrosis patients by more than 20 years. He encourages you to donate to the Cystic Fibrosis Foundation to help find a cure. It's easy to donate. Go to cff.org. That's cff.org.
HealthyLife.net, the positive radio network.
If you are a medical or licensed healthcare professional or just anyone looking for a qualified hypnosis practitioner, then go on over to ASCH.net. That's the American Society of Clinical Hypnosis. At ASCH.net, you can get certified, attend workshops, and even find a hypnosis practitioner or consultant. ASCH provides an opportunity to learn and interact with colleagues. So whether you're a professional wanting to learn hypnosis or a patient wanting help with a problem, visit ASCH.net now.
Constant Contact and your small business make a perfect fit for marketing. They give you what you need to succeed. Fast and easy email marketing at your fingertips. Visit the HealthyLife.net advertiser page and click on Constant Contact to start your marketing.
Healing and changing children's lives with hypnosis is very real and very possible. Dr. Ron Anbar's new book, Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis, provides you meaningful stories and expert explanations to show you not only the process of hypnosis, but its many benefits for overall wellness. Whether a parent, practitioner, or medical doctor, this book opens the way to complete connection, so necessary for healing. Get your copy of Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis at Amazon.com or visit dranbar.com.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Dr. Ron Anbar and his dedicated team of healthcare providers offer unique health services to help patients overcome psychological roadblocks or use the power of their minds to improve their overall health and well-being. At Centerpoint Medicine, with services in La Jolla, California, and Syracuse, New York, this caring staff are waiting just to help you. Find out more at centerpointmedicine.com. Can't wait? Make your appointment now. Call 858-201-4001. That's 858-201-4001.
Radio your way. HealthyLife.net.
Welcome back to Centerpoint. I'm your host, Dr. Ron Anbar, a special guest, Dr. Elvira Lang Anderson, who's sharing some of her wisdom and vast experience. I'm so impressed by the work you have done, are doing, to re-educate our healthcare providers to help patients across the globe get better care. It's amazing. So I'm wondering, I always, in the last segment, we always talk about things our audience can take home with them. So would you have three tips based on your wisdom and knowledge that people can start employing today to help themselves feel better, do better in life?
Yeah, very simple one. If in case one is stressed out about anything, one can just say, okay, with each breath in, I'm taking in strength, and each breath out, think calm. Or each breath in, take in strength. Each breath out, let go whatever I want to let go of. And if there's discomfort, you can say, with each breath in, I'm taking strength. And each breath out, I blow any discomfort right through the skin. It's a very simple way of self-hypnosis. The other thing is, when I go to a medical procedure, I always say that to myself, And we also recommend to our staff to use this as an immunization, which is use all the sounds and noises to deepen your own experience and let the rest go by. So what this do is, if you somewhere and perhaps you even get into your own hypnotic state, let's say you do some daydreaming, you think where you'd rather be, and then the phone rings or something, or you have an MRI and there's a lot of this loud banging, if you just say yourself, okay, I'm just going to take all the sounds and noises to have my own experience, it helps you to get into a setting that feels good for you. And equally important, and let the rest go by. I'm hearing only to suggestions that are helpful for me, and the rest let go by. That's also very important, because people are going to come and tell you things in their best intention that may not be helpful. So I think with those three elements, one can get through a lot.
That's really, really helpful. One of my nurse practitioners uses the metaphor that life throws green balls at you, which are helpful, and red balls, which you have to work on, and black balls that you don't have to catch.
So, lovely.
Just let them go by. So, and where do you see yourself moving in the future with your work? What would you like to do in the next 5-10 years to build on your wonderful success?
Well, I want to do in other places what we have done for the Bevolkingsonderzoek in the Netherlands. It's their National Breast Cancer Screening Service. And the Netherlands has a very enlightened medical system where everything is driven by outcomes. And women there were very afraid that screening mammography hurts a lot. The system is fabulous. They send every woman in the country over age, 55 a letter, come for that annual exam. If you don't have an MRI unit close by, they bring you a truck. I mean, this is amazingly well organized, yeah? But only 65% of women used to take that on or come for a repeat mammogram. I mean, here in the States, it's about 85% for repeat mammograms. 85% to 90%. So at this level, you suddenly start to affect population health. But also the way the mammograms are done is extremely well structured. The total patient interaction is 6 minutes. From the moment they come to reception, brought to the dressing room, get the mammogram, walked out again. So there isn't room and time for a lot of work. Very stressful, so there's a high turnover. So after we did an initial pilot, two things happened. Patients reported less pain, number one. Number two, staff liked it better because some miracle happened, which was that some patients started to say, thank you. And after that initial pilot, we now developed an internal trainer system for them so that, every woman in the Netherlands who gets a screening mammogram there will be touched eventually by a Comfort Talk trained person. So that is the model I would like to emulate in other systems, ideally throughout the VA system. And, I have to give American Society of Clinical Hypnosis incredible credit for this year really have integrated sessions that were specifically directed at caregivers in the VA system. Yeah, I mean, I worked at the VA system. It's amazing patients there who believe they deserve the very, very best care and intervention such as that added to their general work. So that's kind of what I am looking at right now.
I'm so impressed. I talk to my patients about finding awesome experiences in life or finding evidence of spirituality, because I think that's a very healing kind of approach. And listening to what you're doing in the world is so awe-inspiring. You're changing the world. This is like this is like a dream that you can, that you're making into reality. Very, very inspiring.
Well, I think it is also in part that hypnosis societies traditionally, and I mean just through the nature of it, were training the willing. You know, people came and signed up for that. Yeah. So that is very different from our model, where we do train individuals who at the onset are unwilling because they believe they're already perfect. Yeah. And this is where, in the beginning, there was a fair amount of resistance. I mean, we even once wrote a paper that even people who didn't want to be trained, yeah, and then eventually did get trained, yeah, and claimed that they never used the techniques, they actually did use them, and their patients had better outcomes, yeah. and that was early on the experience. Now, it really helps to change institutional culture. People in general like it because they're actually also better able to communicate with each other better. And they get very, very good at managing uphill. Yeah? Very good at it. You know, I remember when I worked at the Bessieswell Deaconess here at Harvard Medical School, we had the faculty meeting, and then there was always half of the faculty meeting, which was the complaints the residents didn't like this or that, yeah. And after they were trained, suddenly this didn't show up anymore because the residents could solve, you know, the call schedule and all that with the faculty without it ever becoming a problem. So it's just to get a bit more peace in the workspace, which I think particularly after COVID is very important to give people enjoyment in their work again. And there's nothing like a patient for whom you made a big difference and who's grateful. Nothing like that as an incentive to come back to work the next day.
I think you're reminding people how wonderful medicine can be. And thank you so much for doing that, because that's so much needed in our medical system. So thank you again, Dr. Lang Anderson, for sharing some of your wisdom and knowledge with us. Very much appreciated. I learned a lot. And I wish for you and everyone all the best. This is Center Point with Dr. Ron Anbar.